This is Paul Jindrasiak for Sunday Morning Town Square, and I'm joined by Bill Kreisler. Bill is a sound engineer, and for the last 30-plus years, he's worked with some of the biggest names in music. Bob Seger, Christina Aguilera, Def Leppard, Prince, Tom Petty, Paul McCartney, John Mayer, Rihanna, Bob Seger, and the list continues. He also runs a studio in Grand Haven called Red Wall North Studios. How are you doing today, Bill?
I'm doing great, Paul. Thanks.
So for those who may not be familiar with what a sound engineer is and does, can you tell us a bit about what's involved in that from live music to a studio setting?
Well, a studio setting is pretty much the environment is 100% controlled. You can make things sound like you want to. If you want a reflective surface, then you build your instrument around things that bounce, you know, glass walls or brick walls or hardwood or anything that reflects. And if you want a real tight sound, then you get in front of something that's padded, or you just create your environment. When you do live shows, you're subject to the acoustics of the building that you're in. If it just is a big, boomy building, then that's what you have to deal with. And I think as an audio engineer on the road, the best thing to do is learn how to work with the environment of the building. You can only fight it so much, and at that point you need to just use it as part of the sound of the band that you're with.
Now, you've been doing this for about 30-plus years. How did you get involved?
Oh, man, I started back in the 70s with I think the first band I worked with was a band called Tanglewood. My brother was the drummer. Charlie Hune was one of the guitar players. He's the frontman for Foghat now.
Okay.
Been with a lot of different bands. In fact, in the last month, I've been talking with most of the guys from Tanglewood, and we're kind of planning on all getting together early next year and maybe even doing a show in Grand Rapids.
So, oh, very nice.
Kind of interesting, yeah. The Grand Rapids guys, Charlie lives down in Florida, but some of the Grand Rapids guys, we've already got together a couple of times and ran through some of the old songs. So I'm looking forward to it. It should be a lot of fun.
Now, you had gone out to L.A. at some point in the 70s, correct?
Yeah, I still go out to L.A. a lot, but I had a place out there in the 70s. I think the first time I went was with a band called Natchez Trace, which is a Grand Rapids band.
Yes.
We went in 1976, I think, and I made some great connections out there and really stayed. I mean, I ended up having a place out there till 1984. I was on tour a lot after that. Before 84. But in 1984, I don't think I ever stayed in my house in Los Angeles one night the entire year. So in 1985, I bought a motor home and kind of kept it out there. And that was a good place to unwind from a tour. I'd go get in the motorhome, drive out to Death Valley or up north, and then when I got recharged, I would head back out on the road again.
Now, who was your first major tour with?
Man, I think the first band that I did was probably the first international band I worked with was Roxy Music.
Okay, Brian Ferry.
Exactly.
And what was that experience like for you?
Oh, it was great, and I met people on that tour that I work with today. Chris Adamson was the production manager on that tour, and he is now the production manager with John Mayer. And so we still see each other. We still keep in touch. We're good friends. In fact, I talked to him yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
He is out with Neil Young, and I forget what band he was calling about, Soundgarden or somebody like that. And they needed an engineer, so he was calling to see if I was available. But I'm out with Ray LaMontagne right now, so wasn't able to do that. But that was a great experience getting to travel around the world and just work with, I love the music. I love Roxy Music and Brian Ferry. It was just a beginning experience. A guy from Grand Rapids, it was really extraordinary.
Now, what are some of the differences that you're looking for in sound and quality-wise versus studio versus a live setting?
In the studio, I want to help them get their best performance as a producer, but I want them to get their sound. Every band, every combination of musicians and their chemistry is different, and that's what makes them or breaks them, and that's what I try and get across. Whatever they really sound like, I don't want the environment to interfere with the pure musical quality of the artists up there. I want them to sound like what they sound like. If you go into a hall that's huge and boomy, and you have a nice trio on stage trying to sing, and it just sounds like a big roll of low end, and you can't understand the words or pick out any musical parts. I try and make it so that, sometimes you just have to turn everything down so that there's more clarity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you just try and get the best for the band to make them sound like their own musical group, you know?
Sure, absolutely. And I mean, it's sometimes interesting how you'll have a musician like, for example, maybe a Bob Dylan or a Jackson Brown, and they'll be in an arena, and it would seem like it would be a bit of a challenge versus, you know, having them in some place like in, you know, Grand Rapids, like at DeVos Hall, where it would maybe be more suited for them.
Absolutely. Most of the arenas that we do, well, nowadays they're starting to put some effort into the acoustic treatment of these arenas, but most of them in the 70s and 80s and 90s even, they were designed and built for hockey or
right.
basketball or a sporting event, and it was just an acoustic nightmare. One of the nicest places that started coming up early was the Palace in near Detroit.
Right, right,
and
right.
I think the same architects, same builders built Van Andel in Grand Rapids.
Okay.
But it's also a very good sounding room. So Grand Rapids has a good sounding space to hear big concerts. It's not just a Voss Hall, but
right.
Van Andel is a
yeah.
good sounding room.
Right.
I've done a number of shows there, and it's a pleasure compared to, you know, like the Quonset Hut in Hershey, Pennsylvania. And
sure, sure. Well,
there's
I know
some rough sounding rooms around the country.
Yeah, I know you were through a few years ago. Maybe it was 2010 or somewhere in that neck of the woods with John Mayer.
Mm-hmm.
For the Van Andel Arena.
Yep.
Now, you're presently on the road with Ray LaMontagne, and you've worked with some pretty big names, you know, Seeger, Christina Aguilera, Tom Petty, Paul McCartney, John Mayer, of course. What are they looking for in their sound when they come to you? What are you bringing to the table for these guys?
Well mostly nowadays, I mix monitors. I mix the sound for the artist. I don't mix for Paul McCartney's audience. I mix for Paul.
Right.
Ray, or, you know, I mix the stage sound. So they're looking, I mean, bottom line, they need something to pitch to keep time to,
mm-hmm.
Things that they have to have. I try and get these things to them really quickly, mm-hmm. real fast, so that they can do their performance. But then I try and make it so that they get things that they want, that they enjoy, you know. Not just a drum, but a good sounding, you know, representation of a drum kit and maybe some reverb on your voice and a nice mix, you know. I try and get them so that they enjoy their show. I really try and make my job transparent to the artist. I don't even want them thinking about what I do, about their monitors.
Sure.
I want them thinking about their show.
How
if they come off and they're happy with their performance,
mm-hmm.
man, that was a great show. That's a success for me. You know,
sure.
I you know, the monitors were great. I want them to not even think about what I do, and then I feel I've done the best job that I can.
Sure. How much of it is science and how much of it is art?
Oh, man, good question. They do give you artistic license. I mean, you have your hands on the dial. You make it sound like what you think they want to hear. So a good portion of it, but the tools, half of it, probably 50% of it, is using the tools correctly, using the compressors and noise gates and reverbs and delays and you know, trying to create this. You know, your console is like an instrument, so it's like the guitar to the guitar player. How much of it is the song and how much of it is the instrument?
Sure. What are some of your favorite venues around the world that you enjoy crafting sound in most?
Well, I love the Van Andel. Like I said, it's a good-sounding room in the palace. There's a room in Osaka that has the same acoustic. It has the seats have the same acoustic absorption as a human body. So when you go in there and do your sound checks, it sounds just like the show.
Mm.
So it doesn't change. It's a great place. I don't know why other places haven't thought of something like that. What other venues? A lot of the theaters. I really like the sound of the theaters and outdoor venues where there's no acoustic issue at all.
Mm-hmm.
There's no walls to bounce back or metal ceiling to bounce down, where the sound just goes out. You can use, you don't have to use so much equalization on your equipment. You can just leave it flat and it sounds pretty good.
Have you done Red Rocks much? I know a lot of folks talk about Red Rocks. Is that a favorite venue of yours?
I have done Red Rocks. That's an interesting place. You can stand on stage and talk and hear way out in the audience. The acoustics are pretty amazing there. It's a beautiful venue. The Gorge is also out in Washington State, one of the most beautiful venues that there is. I've done a number of shows out there as well.
Now, the one in Osaka, would you say that kind of almost represents a perfect venue?
Well, technically, yeah. It's a dome. It's not that the sound is perfect, but the sound doesn't change from a sound check to a show. When the bands come in the afternoon, usually around 4 o'clock, it seems they get together and they play on stage, and a lot of that is just to get used to kind of the acoustics of the room. If it's going to be big or boomy or tight or whatever, they do that to not so much to rehearse because they've been on the road playing, but they want to get used to the acoustics of the room.
Sure.
And then when they come for the show, there's an additional, you know, 15,000 people in the audience, and that kind of changes the acoustics.
Mm-hmm.
That place in Osaka, it doesn't change. When you come in to do the show, it's pretty much the same sound as when it was empty for sound check.
Gotcha.